The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning. Shana Tova, how are you?
Boker Tov, Shana Tova, Kamal Tov. Happy to hear that people had a good time over Yom Kippur. But just on a sporting note before we get into the serious stuff, I see that the England-France game has been cancelled due to the typhoon. It kind of feels like a Brexit rerun. We don't know who's going to be playing against who and whether it's actually going to be happening or not. Quite a weird situation.
It really is. It changes everything. It just shows you.
Absolutely. Yeah. And before we talk about the Israel stuff, Howard, we can't not talk about the events in Germany from yesterday. Really,
absolutely.
We can't.
Appalling, appalling situation. To turn on the phone, to turn on communication last night to see that two people were killed in what was very clearly an anti-Semitic attack in Halle in Germany is astounding. Yeah. Absolutely astounding.
It's astonishing, and it just indicates to us that, you know, anti-Semitism is very much alive and well. And when you see the information that's been posted by the perpetrator of this attack, both in terms of what he wrote before the attack and how he went about it and what was driving him, it's clear that anti-Semitism is so live and well. And it kind of brings some thoughts to mind about how and if we can actually deal with this anti-Semitism that we're finding. I know that the German government has really gone out of its way to outlaw anti-Semitism, and I just wonder to what extent that might be driving it rather than making it, the fact that they've made it criminal to perpetrate anti-Semitism, I just wonder, you know, whether that's helping or hindering the situation. That's a discussion of itself. But one of the things that is, one of the things that I've also been wondering about is, besides actually having a physical barrier, in other words, protecting ourselves against anti-Semitism, as indeed that shul in Halle managed to do, the attacker wanted to get into the shul. One could imagine what would have happened if the barriers weren't put up properly around that shul and the man would have been able to get into the shul during the Yom Kippur services, what kind of a carnage we might have seen there. So thank God for the fact that they had their protection up, the physical protection. I know the Israeli government goes a long way towards trying to help different community security organizations around the world to do what's necessary in order to build up a physical protection against anti-Semites and anti-Semitic behavior. But one wonders whether there is a possibility of educating people. And, you know, this kind of goes a little bit to that horrendous comment that was made by Israeli Foreign Minister Yisrael Katz when he spoke about the fact that children in Poland suckle anti-Semitism from their mother, words to that effect. And even though the comment was completely inappropriate and even though it's created this huge diplomatic storm, there is a real question as to whether there is an education that can help anti-Semitism or help to prevent anti-Semitism, or whether we have to accept the fact that this is something that's handed down from generation to generation. And it's just a question that I'm throwing out there for some thought, because it's something that's occupying my mind at the moment.
Well, one of the points that Zanati and I were talking about a little bit earlier is the comment that they made when they posted this online, saying the Jews are the root of all evil, which is just an incredible thing. First of all, there's only 14 million of us in the world, and I don't even know what that works out, but it's 0.00 something percent, whatever that would be. We're a minute fraction. We are not a missionary religion. In other words, we aren't going out and trying to get more people to join the Judaic faith, and one would think that that's actually quite. I mean, I don't know how we have time to even do anything else. If that small amount of us is the root of all evil, we must be pretty busy.
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, for me, what that says is that nothing has changed over the generations. This notion that Jews are the root of all evil goes back thousands of years, not hundreds, thousands of years, that the Jews are the cause of various things happening and are the root of problems in the world of one type or another. And it just indicates that over the years, over the generations, very, very little has changed in the way that other religions view the Jewish faith. And I think that that's a very sad thing. And it is an indication that it is something that's certainly handed down from generation to generation.
really just beyond frightening, and how little has changed is just something that is really, really terrible. Moving on to some other subjects. Another sad story was the fact, and we spoke about this, that highways almost close. Kids ride their bikes on Yom Kippur, obviously kids that are less observant, but there was a terrible tragedy in that two children were actually killed on the roads over Yom Kippur. What happened?
Well, two separate incidents, two tragedies, in fact, a child of a young boy of 8 and a young boy of 10, both of whom were riding their bicycles on the road. And there were vehicles on the road, apparently, in these particular instances. And in the one case, a car knocked the child off their bicycle in the area of Tel Aviv, actually on a main road, but within the city of Tel Aviv. And in the other case, a child was knocked off his bicycle in the Ben Shemin area on a road that is really an intercity road. It's not really within the city, but it's intercity. And I think that this really causes a lot of thought for the Israeli authorities about how to deal with Yom Kippur, because it's traditional, as I spoke about on Tuesday, that the roads are clear of cars and that children take over the roads, and there's bicycles and there's roller skates and there's scooters and pedestrians all over the road. And so obviously that means that people who do choose to drive vehicles on Yom Kippur, on any road in Israel, whether they're the emergency vehicles or whether people driving their private vehicles, because there is actually no law against driving your car on Yom Kippur. In other words, there is nothing illegal about doing that, even though it's very much not traditional. It's very much unusual for people to be driving cars on Yom Kippur. The roads are pretty much deserted. But in this particular instance, there's a real misunderstanding. On the one hand, the motorist driving the vehicle, in one case was actually a motorcyclist. On the other hand, the supervision of parents, who ought to be looking after their children, even though the roads are pretty clear of vehicles. And perhaps even the government has a responsibility here to say the official line on Yom Kippur will be the following. So children should not be on intercity roads, because there may be the possibility of cars on those roads. But actually within the city, perhaps there should be no motorized vehicles except for emergency vehicles. And perhaps the time has come for us to formalize the process a little bit, because this informal situation where everything is okay has unfortunately led to two tragedies yesterday. And I think that we can't allow this to go without taking some action next time around in order to prevent this from happening, because one can only see that this is going to escalate from the situation. I mean, every year on Yom Kippur, there are always statistics about how many people had to be treated medically by the emergency services. And of course, there are those women who go into labor who have to be rushed to hospital without access to vehicles. And there are people who dehydrate because of the fact that they're fasting and unaccustomed to it and don't do the right things in order to make sure that they're hydrated before the fast. But also there are always a significant number of medical incidents involving bicycles, pedestrians being knocked over by bicycles, cyclists being injured in one way or another. So this is now becoming a real issue. It kind of reminds me of the statistics that are always published over the Christmas period about the number of number of deaths on the road, because it's the season when all of this happens. Well, this is our kind of equivalent on Yom Kippur, the number of people who need medical treatment. It's got to really stop somehow. And I think the time has come for the authorities to take action and not to allow this to happen again.
Yeah, absolutely right. It's a really crazy situation that this should happen at all. All right, this one is also very, very perplexing to me. I just can't get my head around this. President Trump has announced the withdrawal of the remaining U.S. troops in Syria. Turkey immediately, they wasted no time, even after they were warned. In fact, we were talking about Donald Trump's tweets where he clearly warned Turkey not to behave irresponsibly. That was on Tuesday. And now already there's been an attack by the Turks on Kurdish areas of Syria. What is going on there? And does this impact ultimately on Israel?
Well, I think everything that happens in Syria has an impact on Israel in one way or another. And of course, the Kurds are one of the huge victims in this U.S. withdrawal, because that was really the reason why, when Trump originally announced that he would be withdrawing his troops and then chose not to withdraw them, one of the main reasons was because of the Kurdish issue. Of course, Israel also made a special request of the Trump administration not to withdraw all U.S. troops because that was considered to be contrary to Israeli interests, and the fact that the U.S. Troops were still stationed in Syria was considered to be very much in Israel's favor and to in Israel's interest for that to happen. Now, of course, President Trump has decided to withdraw those troops, and to be fair to him, I don't necessarily blame him for that, because I think one of the main considerations of the U.S. president is when I send my troops over to fight a war outside of my country, whose war am I fighting? Whose benefit is this going to be towards? And is there any American interest served while I risk the lives of my troops? And I think that he is absolutely right to say, look, I think we've done the job that we need to do. The U.S. can, of course, be a protector of weaker nations out there, but there has to be some sort of a limit to that. The U.S. can't constantly risk its people, risk the lives of its soldiers in order to fight other people's wars. And I think that at some point they have to be prepared to pull out and say, we've done our job, we've done the best that we can, and we need to bring our troops home. And I commend Trump for taking that action. I think it's a difficult decision, and we've seen, you know, previous situations where American troops have been caught up in all kinds of wars around the world without being able to pull out because of various weaknesses, various weak people who need the U.S. protection. And of course, in this case, it's the Kurds, and they feel very much let down. As far as Israel is concerned, obviously, the whole Turkish operation and the permission almost, you know, I'll use that word fairly loosely, permission in inverted commas, that Turkey has been given, because Trump has specifically said he warned Turkey not to do anything silly. But Mike Pompeo, on the other hand, has said that there was nothing said to prevent Turkey from taking this action. But the Turks were always going to do this. And I think that the Turks feel somewhat emboldened by this action that they're taking against the Kurds. They call it action against Kurdish fighters. They talk about Kurdish terrorists. It's quite amusing to see the name of the operation that they've given to this particular work that the attack that the Kurds have undertaken, because it makes it almost sound like it's a peacekeeping operation, that they're trying to do a kind of a favor to the world by launching this particular attack. But the reality is that the Turks and the Turkish government in particular have really been emboldened. They're taking this action against the Kurdish fighters. It's very, very difficult for us to see where it's going to be.
And just adds to the complexity of this whole Syrian war.
But clearly they are going to... It very, very much adds to the complexity of the Syrian situation. Of course, Israel is standing by, watching from a distance, not wanting to get involved. But inevitably, Israel is somehow going to need to get involved in order to protect Israel's borders and to protect Israel's interests. And it's not clear to me at the moment exactly how that's going to pan out. But I have absolutely no doubt that that is definitely going to be the case. And so, of course, Israeli security and Israeli intelligence are watching very, very carefully to see where all of this goes. But the fact that the Turks have been emboldened and have gone in and have already attacked without any delay at all, I think is a worrying sign. And it does also put a strong question mark over Turkey's role in world setup of security, because Turkey, of course, is a member of NATO. And so this is something that really confuses the situation a great deal.
It really does. Anthony, before we let you go, Sukkot begins on Sunday night, which means we'll only be talking to you again on Wednesday, Monday, Tuesday. We, of course, will be celebrating Sukkot and will not be on air. But what does it mean? Just tell us quickly what that means in Israel.
Well, in Israel, most people have already built their Sukkot, because it's quite traditional, as soon as you break your fast after Yom Kippur, to immediately go out and build a sukkah. And so that's what a lot of people did last night. As soon as the fast was broken, drank a bit of water, had something to eat. There is no party. There is no huge meals. There's no breaking of the fast feasts, as is common elsewhere around the world. People just go out and build their sukkot. And, of course, the sukkah fair is already up and open. People are buying their arba minim, their four species, and their schach, and their bits and pieces for the sukkah. Sukkot are very prevalent. You see them everywhere. It'll be a very much an outdoor festival. Schools will be closed. It'll be a happy time. And let's hope also a safe time for us. So all that remains is for me to wish you guys a Shabbat Shalom and Chag Sameach. And I look forward to talking to you again on Chol HaMoed on Wednesday.
Yep, it's very, very confusing, all of these weeks. Anthony Rach, have a Shabbat Shalom, Chag Sameach, and all good things. Here's Anati with your news.